This is Miriam Schiff with KGNU Radio, and I am your host. Thank you so much for joining me today. On November 27th, 2015, a shooting spree occurred near and at a Planned Parenthood clinic in Colorado Springs. A police officer and two civilians were killed. Five police officers and four civilians were injured after a standoff that lasted 5 hours. Police persuaded the suspected shooter to surrender. He was charged with first-degree murder and was ordered held without bond. This incident drew comments from the anti-abortion and abortion rights movements. Authorities said the motive was unknown on the day of the shooting. However, the investigation later revealed that Deer, the shooter, was likely inspired by his extreme right-wing views. The nation watched and once again realized that the war on women's reproductive rights continued to be a major part of not only our political agenda, but was now hitting us at home in Colorado. With me today to talk about the decades of threats and violence, his personal experiences, and the escalating climate of what I and other women's rights women call domestic terrorism that is pervading our country is Dr. Warren Hearn. He's the medical director of the Boulder Abortion Clinic, holds a master's in public health, is an epidemiologist, author of many books and articles. He is also the recipient of many awards and has been a champion of women's health rights and issues for the past 42 years. Thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Hearn.
Thank you for inviting me.
As always, it's such a pleasure to have you sit and talk to us about what is going on. I want to start with the interview you did with statnews.com. You spoke about the decades of threats and violence that you and other doctors had experienced.
It was not an interview. I wrote the article.
You wrote the article.
Yeah.
Thank you. Share with us your reactions to the news of the Colorado Springs Planned Parenthood attack.
Well, I was horrified and shocked, but not surprised, because the attack on Colorado Springs was an inevitable consequence of the anti-abortion rhetoric coming from Republican candidates for president, and the fact that the anti-abortion group made a fraudulent, surreptitious videos of various Planned Parenthood operations, and distorted the facts very considerably. And this then stimulated the Republicans again to attack Planned Parenthood in Congress. So that the man who did the shooting is very disconnected from society, was bathed in anti-abortion propaganda coming from the Congress, coming from the Republican leaders, and from the anti-abortion groups. And what the anti-abortion groups have consistently done over the last 40 years is to do target identification. And then when the violence erupts inevitably and is carried out by someone who thinks he's either talking with God or with the Republicans, then goes and does the shooting. And then the anti-abortion leaders say, oh, we didn't know anything about that. That's too bad. It's plausible deniability. This is kind of a form of electronic fascism.
When you talk about electronic fascism, explain that to us a little bit.
Well, for example, let me give you an example from my personal experience. For example, Randall Terry has been one of the main anti-abortion leaders for the last 35 years or so. Right after Dr. George Tiller was shot in 1993, Randall Terry went on National Christian Radio Broadcasting and invited his leaders to assassinate me. What can anybody do about that? I think that the anti-abortion leaders have consistently used the most inflammatory rhetoric, reference to women and to doctors involved with abortion, and it inevitably has led to these violent incidents. And that's what they want to happen. And Joseph Scheidler was famous for saying, if we can't make abortion illegal, we'll make it impossible. So Scheidler went around the country inflaming people to attack abortion clinics, and he got a lot of the results that he wanted. And so he could stand back in Chicago and say, well, I didn't have anything to do with it. And in fact, he did. The Republican candidates, including Carly Fiorina, among others, inflamed things more by exaggerating and fabricating, in fact, statements about the Planned Parenthood videos that were totally false, but which people believed. And so have the other Republican candidates. And I think that the so there's a, I'm afraid, a strong strain of fascism in the Republican leadership right now, and it's most clearly exemplified by Donald Trump, who's a fascist demagogue. And the main difference between him and Hitler is that Hitler had real black hair and a mustache.
That's a great analogy.
Well, he's Donald Trump is America's Hitler, and people need to recognize that.
And yet, when you speak to people and you read articles against Planned Parenthood, the realities don't seem to make any difference.
No, the facts and reason and logic are not relevant here in this, because it's about power. And the anti-abortion people are not interested in facts or reason or logic or compassion for women. They want power, and they have used the Republican Party to get power, and the Republican Party has used the anti-abortion fanatics to get power, and it's been very effective for both of them.
It boggles my mind that 2 years ago, you and I talked on the anniversary, 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, that the abortion, the Supreme Court, the passing of Roe v. Wade, and the hatred and fanaticism that is still causing deaths and targeting women still continues. And
yeah.
it heightens during election years and years before election years. We spoke about the importance of voting and the need to uphold women's rights. We had an election. Candidates who did not support women's rights were elected in, were voted in, which completely I can't understand as a woman.
Well, the fact is that the people who are opposed to abortion care much more about getting power and about winning elections than the people who support choice. You know, we have an example in the election of Cory Gardner as senator to replace Mark Udall. Mark Udall was a very, very strong, excellent U.S. senator who supported women's rights and made that a central part of his campaign, which was very appropriate. He was attacked and pilloried by the anti-abortion editorial staff of the Denver Post, and that was one of the factors in Mark Udall's losing the election, aside from the fact that the pro-choice people did not come out and vote for him in adequate numbers. And so now we have an anti-abortion, Cory Gardner, as the U.S. senator, who supported the personhood and all that sort of thing, and is very much opposed to women's rights. And so elections matter. And these elections have a tremendous influence on the way the Supreme Court goes. The next president will probably appoint several justices of the U.S. Supreme Court. If it's a Republican, Roe versus Wade will be overturned. There's no question about it.
Discussing the overturning of Roe v. Wade, Ted Cruz was said in one of his interviews that I don't have to overturn Roe v. Wade. I can pass laws that make personhood a reality. Can you talk?
Well, I think that the whole personhood movement of making a fertilized egg a person with voting rights and foreign policy views is completely ridiculous, but that's been part of the anti-abortion strategy. Ted Cruz is vociferously against abortion rights and has made that a central part of his political campaign.
With everything else that needs to be looked at and seen, hunger, poverty, education status of this country, why is there a continuous war on abortion and abortion doctors?
Because it helps Republicans win elections. It helped Ronald Reagan become president in 1980. It helped the Republicans take over the United States Senate in 1980. It helped the Republicans take over Congress in 1994. This is the opposition to abortion has been the hammer and tongs to power for the Republican Party. And as long as the American people vote for these people, for the Republicans, we will lose. And women will lose their opportunity to make decisions about their own lives. The Republicans believe that women are for pleasure and having babies, and they should have as many as possible. That's their official policy. It's a pre-medieval policy. The Republican policies are back in the Dark Ages. It's almost saying too much to say that they're speaking for the 4th century. So to them, the 19th century looks like way too much progress. So that, I mean, as long as the American people vote for Republican candidates who oppose choice, that's where we're going.
Talk to us a little bit about, personally, in your article that you wrote in Stat, you told us about your first death threats.
Well, they weren't actually the first death threat. I got death threats when I was working for the Washington D.C. for the federal government, helping run a national family planning program for the poor. I got death threats from the white supremacists at that time. That was long before I started doing abortions. I was simply helping women have access to birth control. And so I was asked to help start the first nonprofit outpatient abortion clinic in Colorado here in Boulder in 1973. And I helped set that up. I was the founding medical director. And we started doing abortions shortly after the beginning of November of 1973. And within 2 weeks, I was getting obscene death threats in the middle of the night at 3 o'clock in the morning at my house in the mountains. And I thought, how could they find me here? But they did. And I was afraid I was going to be shot in my own home, or walking out of my home, or getting as I arrived home from my office. And so the death threats are not new. The anti-abortion people have shown that they will accept any level of violence and will stop at nothing to impose their views on the rest of us. You know, the main difference between the anti-fascist anti-abortion movement in the United States and you know, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, Hamas, is about 8,000 miles. It's the same outfit, the same operation. The Taliban wants a fascist Islamic theocracy, and the anti-abortion fanatics in the United States want a fascist Christian theocracy. And so this is a matter of geography more than a difference in political outlook. And so the anti-abortion people have been very effective in using violence and also in making a symbiotic relationship with the Republican Party. The Republican Party, 40, 50 years ago, was run by very intelligent, thoughtful, progressive people. And there were a lot of Republican leaders who were really outstanding and in some ways more progressive than the Democrats. But the Republican Party has been taken over by the radical political right and the anti-abortion movement.
Thank you. Before we continue, I want to remind my listening audience that you are listening to KGNU Boulder, Denver, 88.5 FM, 1390 AM, and 93.7 in Nederland. This is Miriam Schiff, and I am joined by Dr. Warren Hearn, sharing experiences, insights of the violence and on abortion providers and today's climate on women's reproductive rights. When we begin attacking Planned Parenthood, for me, this is not about only abortions, because it's only 5% of their entire picture. It is about women's health rights. It's about women's reproductive rights that couldn't afford to go anywhere else. A lot of women who are not insured. Can we talk a little bit about how this is? It's, for me, it's almost like an oligarchy where there is a few very wealthy men who are fostering their ideas and their needs on the community and want the big picture to change.
Well, it's true that the Republican Party is a party of plutocrats. This is about a party controlled by, you know, rich white men who do not want women to have any say in public policy, and by women who happen to agree with them. But in any case, it is true that increasingly we have that kind of situation. But the fundamental problem is that American people keep voting for these guys, And if they didn't vote for the Republican candidates, the Republicans wouldn't control Congress and wouldn't have that kind of power. And so I think that I'm afraid that there's there are a lot of people in the United States who don't understand fascism, even if they're participating in it and voting for it. And that's what we're seeing in the phenomenon of Donald Trump's candidacy. And it's very frightening because I think that, you know, and as far as women are concerned, one of the first things that authoritarian, totalitarian governments have done is to suppress the rights of women. This was true for Ceausescu in Romania. It was true for Hitler. And I think that the rights of women to be educated and make their own decisions about their own lives and health is absolutely fundamental. Abortion is a fundamental component of women's health care in the 20th century in the United States, and the people running the Republican Party don't accept that, and they use the issue to get elected.
When we spoke before, you shared with me that not only are you at risk for harm, but the people that work for you, the people that walk in and out of your office are as well. And this is Boulder, Colorado.
No, everybody who works for me, everybody who helps me, everybody who helps with women's health services in this country are at risk of their lives. That's the way it is, and it's very unfortunate, and it's the antithesis of the American idea.
For 42 years, you've been a champion of women and women's rights, and
Longer than that, actually.
Okay, yeah. And you were the founding medical director of Boulder, what is now Boulder Woman Valley.
Well, Women's Health. I mean, it was called Boulder Valley Clinic at that time.
Which was the first abortion clinic in Colorado after Roe v. Wade.
Correct.
So I have just one word. Why? With all of this is about dedication, about caring about women, about believing in the right of what should be, overshadowed by the terror and the fear of assault and death.
Well, look, I'm a public health physician. My training's in public health. I have a master's degree in public health. I have a PhD in epidemiology. That's my educational, that is my academic training. And that's my professional point of view. It was clear to me as a medical student and as a graduate student, as a Peace Corps physician working in Brazil and other parts of Latin America, that unsafe abortion was a terrible public health problem for women particularly and for their whole society. And there was many, many kinds of evidence about that. I would go to the maternity hospital in Salvador Bahia, Brazil, where I worked as a Peace Corps physician. And the doctors there would take me through, and they would have two wards full of women recovering from unsafe abortion and septic abortion, and one ward full of women recovering from childbirth. 50% of the women in the abortion wards died. And in this country, when I worked in public health in Washington, D.C., it was apparent that the laws against abortion were having a terrible effect for poor women and minority women, who had a 9 or 10 times higher death rate due to abortion than white women who had access to safe health services, even though they're illegal. And so this was a public health issue. When I was asked to help start what became Boulder Valley Clinic, I agreed to do that, and I thought I would do it for a short time because I thought it was an important thing to do to implement Roe versus Wade and make it meaningful. And I thought I would do it for a year or two and go back to school and complete my PhD program in epidemiology. But in fact, in the process, when I was taking care of the women, it was very clear this was a critical health care problem for women. The women were very grateful, especially those who had had illegal abortions earlier in their lives. And they were desperately afraid, but they were grateful that we were offering a safe service for people. So, but at the end of the time it came for me to leave that clinic, it was clear to me that performing abortions was the most important thing I could do in medicine. And so I established my private medical practice in Boulder Abortion Clinic, in 1975. I've been involved in women's health care, women's rights issues for quite a while before that. But I think that this was my way of dealing with that and to offer that service. and I've been doing it since then. We've taken care of women from all over the world at my office, and we continue to do that. I'm every day renewed in my dedication to that and determination to offer the service, and it's very clear that it's very important for women's health. So it's baffling to me when people don't understand that and, in fact, violently oppose it. It's even opposed by many members of the medical community right here in Boulder. And that is one of the most disturbing things about it, is that most of the medical community in Boulder appears to be opposed to women's rights and access to safe abortion services. And it's really astonishing to me. And I think that that wasn't always true, but I think that there are always people who disagree, have philosophical disagreements. But how could anybody be opposed to safe health care for women? And so I continue doing it in spite of these problems. But I think that this is a critical problem in our society. And I'm afraid the political use of this issue by the Republican Party is one of the most dangerous aspects of it. It's leading directly to the violence that we see out there. And the anti-abortion people do everything they can to inflame violent attacks against doctors and women and Planned Parenthood clinics, abortion clinics, and other kind of services for women.
In the movie After Tiller,
yeah,
which gave you the history of Dr. George Tiller, who was brutally murdered while he was
He was assassinated
in church while he was ushering its services. Right. And they had interviews with many abortion doctors. You were one of them.
Yeah.
And what struck me in watching this movie was the interview, the pre-abortion screening that goes on, the self-questioning by a lot of the abortion doctors before they perform the abortions, that this is not a willy-nilly where anybody can walk on off the street that day and say, I would like an abortion. Can you talk to that a little bit?
Well, the movie is really about the three doctors who were working with Dr. Tiller when he was assassinated, and he was teaching those doctors. It's not clear to me why I was included, but it's perhaps because Dr. Tiller and I were very good friends, spent a lot of time together, and considered each other's only peers. We were the only ones in the world, in fact, at that time, doing late abortions for fetal abnormalities. But in any case, I think that the film was very good and it allowed four physicians, including myself, to speak about who we are, what we're doing, and why we're doing it. That is very rare. That virtually has not happened during the 40-some years that Roe versus Wade has been legal, since the Roe versus Wade decision. But in any case, it illustrates the fact that in all of the facilities, this was taken very seriously. And certainly in my office, we spend a lot of time with women asking them, you know, and give them an opportunity to explain what they're doing, why they want to do it, and helping them with their feelings about it and helping them make sure this is what they want to do. And then sometimes there are women who are really not sure what they want to do. And we say, well, why don't you think about it some more? And or this looks like this is not the decision that you're trying to get to. There are women that I turn away who are simply having a hard time deciding, or they really, really don't want to end the pregnancy. They really don't want to have an abortion. And so we support that. We say, you know, this is up to you. This is your life. And so we don't just go pick up people on the mall and bring them in and restrained and do abortions. I mean, there are women who come in from all over the country because they want to end a pregnancy for particular reasons. And in my practice, probably 50% now of all my patients are there because they have a desired pregnancy that is complicated and may be threatening their life. And so these women are making an extremely difficult, wrenching decision to end the pregnancy that they really want because of a catastrophic fetal abnormality or some serious threat to their own life. And I think that so people are often uninformed about what we're doing and why we're doing it. And there's plenty of information out there. Most people, I'm afraid, don't really care to find out and don't want to take the trouble. But I think that those who do will find a lot of information that show that we take this very seriously, and we take people where they are and help them reach a decision that's comfortable for them and to make a decision about their own life.
Which needs to be applauded. So it continues, and I keep on saying this, it continues to boggle my mind that there are human beings who say that they are for women and women's rights who want to bring it back to pre-Roe v. Wade when a woman's life was in jeopardy. Yeah. Of illegal abortions, and were not done. And I mean, I remember hearing about women that had abortions pre Roe v. Wade, and the shame attached to it.
Yeah.
And after Roe v. Wade, when they were supported and loved and cared about by the doctors who performed the abortions, by the clinics that they went to. So to go back to this insanity of prehistoric life just continues to boggle my mind.
Well, it's about power. I think that the most obvious thing is, as I said, the Republican Party has used the abortion issue to get power very successfully. It works for them. And the American people have facilitated that by voting for them. That's a big problem. The people who stand out in front of my office and harass the patient, insult them, and scream at them are there not to express an opinion. They're there to abuse the patients. They feel good by making other people feel bad. What a sick mentality. And what are they doing with their lives out there? They have nothing else to do with their lives except to bother my patients and to threaten my staff. It's vicious, it's stupid, and it's just immoral, and it's outrageous. But that's what they do. And so that is a kind of part of the power equation. They feel good by making other people feel bad. So I build a fence to protect my patients, to give them some privacy when they come into my office at great expense. I should have done it 30 years ago. And what do the anti-abortion people do? Instead of standing where they're supposed to be designated by the police, they move over beyond the fence so they can harass the patients coming up the sidewalk. This is not about free speech. This is about harassment and intimidation. This is hateful activity, and it is really, nobody could defend it as far as I'm concerned, but that's what they do.
And it's being done at a sensitive time in a woman's life,
yeah,
when she needs all the support that she can
that's
get.
Right, that's right. Now, the women are very vulnerable, and they're taking advantage of that to scream at them and scream insults and harassment, and it's just really unconscionable. But that is compelled by their religion and their religious point of view, which is about power.
And also an underlying self-righteousness that the way that they live life and the way they see life should be lived by everyone.
They can't leave anybody else alone. They can't leave other people alone. They have to interfere in the lives of other people. And that is so fundamentally opposed to the basic concepts of American society. That you unless you're hurting somebody else, you can live your own life, and free of harassment and that sort of thing. But the anti-abortion fanatics will not leave other people alone. They have to impose their views in some way, and if it's only by making people feel bad, which is a psychological rape, that's what they do.
How have you had to keep your staff, yourself, and your patients safe when they come into your office?
Well, the thing is, we do the best we can. I mean, I now have bulletproof windows all over around my staff, my staff and my patients and my office to protect people in case there's a violent assault. We have various security measures, which I can't describe. But, you know, it's very expensive, and it's very tedious, and we have to do a lot of things to keep people safe. But we no matter what we do, there's a certain level of vulnerability. And I think that we're dealing with a group of people who are so fanatic that they even don't worry about their own safety in the process of making these attacks.
And I want to thank you and your staff and all doctors that are doing this. Regardless of the problems of walking in, the attacks, the threats, the bulletproof windows, you still are a champion of women and women's rights. I want to let my studio audience, my listening audience, know that you can find more information at online at drhearn.com. You may read Dr. Hearn's article on stat.com. I want to thank you again for joining me today. As always, it's a pleasure hearing your views.
Thank you for inviting me.
A big thank you to my listening audience. Stay tuned for more KGNU, No Spin News, and the Morning Sound Alternative. This is Miriam Schiff reminding you to be good to yourselves.